a young child, a water pump, the child who is blind and deaf, a teacher who persistently spells W, A, T, E, R into the hand of a child over and over and over in an attempt to communicate as the icy well water crosses her skin. These may be the familiar images that arise when you think of the woman whose story we're going to explore this morning, Helen Keller. This iconic story of overcoming the loss of physical sight and hearing has become a beloved tale of resilience and perseverance as a frustrated child is able to communicate, attend school and college, and then travel the world as an advocate for those with disabilities. Helen Keller, the face of those who are blind and deaf. A few images you might not be quite so familiar with. Helen Keller, the Swedenborgian theologian, and Helen Keller, the prophetic voice and writer for social change. It's these two that I would like to bring forward today. But first, beginnings. Helen Keller was born in 1880, an energetic and curious and alert child. At age two, she suffered a serious illness that left her completely blind and deaf. Helen spent the next few years of her childhood struggling to communicate and connect with others, going into rages and tantrums of frustration with her inability to interact with the world around her. In looking back at this time of her life, she writes,
"Truly, I have looked into the heart of darkness and refused to yield to its paralyzing influence."
Helen's life changed dramatically when she was gently and firmly taught by her teacher and guide, Annie Sullivan. It was Annie who opened up the world of language to Helen, and through language gave her the ability to communicate to ideas and people and the life around her. Helen was an inquisitive child, asking questions and wondering about everything. She writes,
"As a little child, I naturally wanted to know who made everything in the world. And I was told that nature had made earth and sky and water and all living creatures. This satisfied me for a time, and I was happy among the rose trees in my mother's garden, or on the bank of a river, or out in the daisy-covered fields."
She learned quickly and was a voracious student. Alexander Graham Bell had assisted her parents in finding her teacher, Annie Sullivan, and later recommended Perkins School of the Blind as the next step for her education and her growth. As she soaked up her studies, she began to ask more questions, questions about God and Jesus and religion and justice.
"I inquired about God, and again I was baffled. Friends tried to tell me that God was the creator, and that he was everywhere, that he knew all the needs, joys, and sorrows of every human life. I was drawn irresistibly to such a glorious, lovable being, and I longed to really understand something about him. I persisted in asking questions about God and Jesus. Why did they kill him? Why does God make some people good and others bad? Why must we all die?"
It was during this time of questioning, while at Perkins School for the Blind, that Helen was introduced to the writings of 18th century mystic and theologian Emanuel Swedenborg by John Hitz, a colleague of Alexander Graham Bell, who she would later call
the foster father of my soul.
Hitz gave her a braille copy of Swedenborg's Heaven and Hell when she was 14 years old. Hitz warned her that it might not make sense to her at first, it's rather dense, but that it would be in time.
"Satisfy me with the likeness of God as lovable as the one in my heart."
When Helen began reading Heaven and Hell, a new opening in her spiritual life began.
"I was as little aware of the new joy coming into my life as I had been years before when I stood on the piazza steps awaiting my teacher, impelled only by the curiosity of a young girl who loves to read. I opened that big book. My heart gave a joyous bound. Here was a faith that emphasized what I felt so keenly. The words love and wisdom seemed to caress my fingers from paragraph to paragraph, and these two words released in me new forces to stimulate my somewhat indolent nature and urge me forward evermore."
Helen's engagement with Swedenborg's teachings was lifelong. She avidly read and wrote about her spiritual journey and how God shaped her after this first encounter.
It has given color and reality and unity to my thought of the life to come. It has exalted my ideas of love, truth, and usefulness. It has been my strongest incitement to overcome limitations.
It's clear from Helen's writing that her faith was core to who she was, and from it, her life arose. When we look at her legacy and her phenomenal lifelong mission to help those who are blind, deaf, or disabled, her work for the emancipation of women, the equal rights and cares of all people, we can see threads going back to her faith and to her theological grounding. Helen's ability to live fully despite her disability is one that's been greatly admired by many. Her physical disabilities gave her much that she could have complained of or fallen victim to, but instead, she chose to approach her life's limitations as teachers and opportunities for internal change. She credits her approach to these challenges to her faith, her spiritual path. She states,
"Long ago, I determined not to complain. The mortally wounded must strive to live out their days for the sake of others. That is what religion is for, to keep the heart brave to fight it out to the end with a smiling face."
She saw her challenges as opportunities for growth and internal transformation. And she took to heart Swedenborg's teachings that
limitations of all kinds are forms of chastening to encourage self-development and true freedom.
Helen knew in her own being that God had called her to important work to do in the world, and she needed to continue to do her own internal work in order to follow this call to bring reformation to others. She writes about feeling like Joan of Arc at times, willing to follow that voice that said, "Come," through any hardship or struggle. As her life progressed, we see her moving through the obvious struggles of functioning without hearing or eyesight, with incredible strength and tenacity and dedication to internal and external reform. Keller scholar Dr. Ray Silverman remarks that Keller
saw herself as a social reformer devoted to relieving human suffering.
The reform that Helen fought for was often expressed as a need for an external outcome, such as women's rights or economic equality. Her spiritual writings, however, call for the reformation of spirit as well. She spoke up for educational systems that were not exclusively focused on the intellect, but that also encouraged compassion, consideration, and empathy as worthy educational goals. Seeing the need for systems to be transformed and strengthened her commitment to be a voice for the internal transformation. She believed that by transforming individuals, that would contribute to the larger society change as a whole. She drew heavily on Swedenborg's teachings that humanity without love, pity, and caring is worse than a beast, and spoke to the restlessness of the recklessness of a power of thought when it is used to harm others. She called for this reformation of the human spirit, a spiritual vision where love, wisdom, and useful service prevail. Throughout Helen Keller's writings and speeches, she shares the overarching message that she drew from the teachings of Swedenborg as one of
God's love for all people, regardless of their religious beliefs and allegiances.
Having read many of the volumes of Swedenborg's writing, she sums up her reading of his theology, central theology, with three ideas:
God as divine love, God as divine wisdom, and God as divine power for use.
And she shared her vision for this eminence of God's love for all people as she reflects who God is by saying,
"Such teachings lift one up to a mountain summit where the atmosphere is clear of hatred, and one can perceive that the nature of the divine being is love and wisdom and use, and God never changes in God's attitude toward anyone at any time."
Helen's life, teaching, and writings was a continual outpouring from this love from God to all people as she became a sought-after voice for social reform. Silverman touts Keller's widespread engagement with these movements.
Helen did indeed carry the banner of social reform to all and fought valiantly to raise consciousness about the plight of the handicapped. But Helen's social reform did not stop at combating preventable blindness.
Silverman goes on to outline Keller's work with the suffragette movement, speaking up for social injustice and against racial prejudice and corrupt politics, denouncing business greed, and openly speaking against the horrors of war. She shares her draw to see God in all religious paths when she writes,
"Instinctively, I found my greatest satisfaction in working with men and women everywhere who ask not, 'Shall I labor among Christians or Jews or Buddhists?' but rather say, 'God, in thy wisdom, help me to create the sorrows of decrease the sorrows of thy children and increase their advantages and joys.'"
She writes about being told by, quote, narrow people, end quote, that those who are not Christian would be punished. She describes her soul being revolted as she considered the possibility of wonderful people she knew who had lived and died for truth as they saw it ending up in hell. Helen was able to reconcile her universalism with her Christianity through Swedenborg's teachings on the symbolism of Jesus Christ.
"I found that Jesus stands for divine good, good wrought into deeds, and Christ symbolizes divine truth, sending forth new thought, new life, and joy in the minds of all people. Therefore, no one who believes in God and lives right is ever condemned."
She went on to write about this view of salvation and how it informed her life, action, and teaching. Helen's theological understanding of God, being one who created and loves all people, came to life in her work as she advocated for those who are not being seen by society at large. Through Helen's beliefs and her own disabilities, she became passionate about issues of equality and care for all people. According to Dennis Wetman, author of one of her many biographies of Keller, she had been
long distressed about poverty and its effects on American children. She had also become a staunch suffragist, an advocate of women's right to vote.
John Dash, another Helen biographer, connects Helen's actions for justice with her own experience of feeling on the margins.
"When she visited the foul-smelling slums of New York, she was reminded of her hopeless and powerless existence as a child,
which spurred on her work to bring hope to those who were suffering." Friends, as we hear stories such as of lives such as this one, I notice in myself how easy it is to write myself out of the story, that the person we look to is in some other realm or possibility. We can tell ourselves, "I could never be one of those people who leave such an impact on the world." We can draw a line between ourselves and the mothers and the fathers that we look to for inspiration. Helen Keller's story reminds me that it is about each one of us. It's a call to contemplation, a call to action, a call to work, and a call to theological reflection in our own lives. Helen's words can echo with us.
"I am only one, but still I am one. I cannot do everything, but still I can do something. I will not refuse to do something I can do."
We are only one, but we are one. I am one, you are one, you cannot do everything, but you can do something. Helen calls us to live a life of action, a life of beauty, a life of inner transformation that leads to outer transformation. Arising from our faith in a loving God to do something that we can do in the world. She calls us to give bread to those who are hungry, to stand for those who are oppressed, to serve a God of love, and to bring the beauty of the fragrant roses to the world.